Yes, sir, Dieter and Jake. 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Jake, I got rear-ended on the way home from Levi's Stadium, and I still had a better day than the 49ers had.
It's a good line. That's a good line. I'm glad you're okay, buddy.
I'm good. I drive a tank. We're all good. The Trent Williams of cars, if you will. Though he had an early exit today because he punched a guy in the face who was wearing a helmet. And that was somewhat indicative of the entire 49ers experience. Frustrations boiling over at the end and just a general piss-poor performance that the scoreline and the stat sheet, they flatter the Niners. Anyone who watched that game knows they got their ass kicked thoroughly.
As Kyle Shanahan explicitly said.
So. He's right. I do want to get into the bigger picture stuff here tonight. Let's start with the micro dosing. Let's get into the nitty gritty. Kind of everything we said was going to go wrong went wrong. I know that it's more complicated than that, but the Niners got beat with the interior of their offensive line versus the interior of their the Chiefs' defensive line. Flip it around. Man-to-man coverage absolutely wrecked the 49ers pass game.
Yep.
The Chiefs' set edges were sound in the run game again and again and again. There were some stretches, sure, where the Jordan Mason had it. He had like 5 yards in the first half. There was nothing there. And ultimately, the 49ers knew what was coming. No secrets, no window dress, nothing. They knew it was coming, both sides of the ball, and they just got whooped. I don't know. Is there anything more? Is it more difficult than that? Is it more complicated than that? What did you see?
No, I think that's about right. I mean, you know, you go back to the start. I was just rewatching it and I didn't have time to get through all of it yet. But the amount that they got away with that they didn't take advantage of is damning. Like, they got 2 Patrick Mahomes interceptions.
Yeah.
And I know Mahomes is turnover prone this year, but like, you get 2 Patrick Mahomes interceptions, you should not just win the game, but at least, at the very least, be in the game, be competitive, and they just got waxed.
Let me throw you this. Patrick Mahomes, if I were to have told you before the game, Patrick Mahomes is going to go 16 for 27 for 154 yards passing, no touchdowns, and 2 interceptions, you're like, wow, the Niners are going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know.
And you could not feel more opposite right now.
Like, the defense at times actually looked really good. They were the only thing holding it together at times. At times, they were getting gutted, you know, when they started just running the jet sweeps and they got attacked on the edges. Mustafa was the only one kind of holding them together at one point in the first half. And then, you know, apropos of everything that went on, of course, Mahomes steamrolls him to basically ice the game. Mustafa owned it, by the way. Respect to him. That kid's awesome. I do believe he's going to be a star. And one of the few bright spots, which we'll talk about, like, he and Jair looked a little better. I mean, I know there's a touchdown that Mahomes missed, which you literally called to open up the second half. But I thought they looked good.
To toot my own horn here, we're sitting at halftime trying to figure out, well, not trying, because we knew exactly what was going wrong for the 49ers. And again, if we can figure it out, you watching at home or in the stadium knew what was happening. And sure shit, every coach and person worth their salt in football knew what was happening too. And we both noted that both Brown and Mustafa were really good in the run game, that they were both firing like crazy in the run game, and that Brown had had a pretty good first half, particularly against Kelsey. And I'm like, you know what they're going to do immediately coming out of into the second half. They're going to be like, these safeties have creeped down far enough. We're going over the top to Xavier Worthy. And Mahomes just missed the throw. He just missed that. This game would have been over well before it was actually over. He doesn't need a 33-yard run. There doesn't need to be anything. It would have been over the first play of the second half had he connected, but he didn't.
I think that would have made things
for a while
easier to stomach. I honestly think it would have, because it would have been like, oh, well, Mahomes just hit, you know, our safeties are young. You know, it's okay. They need time to figure it out. Instead, they let you stay in it. And I think the first thing, because some people are mentioning it, I want to start with Shanahan, because I need to go back to the first half and just philosophically what you've got.
Yeah.
And I think people criticize Kyle. I often end up defending Kyle, even though I've criticized him plenty, because I think he's a very good head coach. Today had a feeling of like, is this is he ever gonna have the let's go kill this game? Like, let's really go be hyper aggressive and be proactive here and do it. And I don't think so, because you go to that first half and you had the second and two and you run it and you get stuffed. Okay, whatever, fine. You know, your front is really struggling against the Chiefs front, which we called out before the game, pretty obvious. Next play, you run it again. It's third and one. You get stuffed again. Dominic Pooney gets destroyed by Tershawn Wharton. And you just sort of, I know it's your own 41, but you just curl up and you basically said, okay, we can get this run. We can get this like 2 yards if we run it twice, but not if we run it a third time. Like, you just didn't trust that.
This is the third possession, QB sneak. Third possession of the game. You went three and out with a third and 19, interception on the first play of the second drive, and then third possession. There are no points on the board, by the way. You've already stopped a fake punt. You've already gotten an interception. Kalia Davis's interception sets up this drive. You go 8 yards to Ayuk on a hook route, inside zone for Mason, 1 yard, another inside run, I think it was outside zone, for nothing, with the interior offensive line just getting racked, as you noted. And then, again, at your own 41, momentum on the line, you've already, again, gotten two turnovers, fourth down stop, and Kalia Davis. The game is hanging right there for you, and Kyle Shanahan says, I don't want it. I don't want it. And then it just got worse from there, Jake. Yeah. What the fuck was going on before the end of the half?
And you had Reed, who calls a timeout, because he's like, I don't think the 49ers are going to get this. We're going to go down. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to get a stop here. They don't. But like, that's what Reed is thinking all the time. He's thinking, how do I get the ball back in my quarterback's hands? And granted, it's Patrick Mahomes, maybe the greatest quarterback we've ever seen. But
correct,
if you're Kyle and you have previously had some belief in Brock, like, I know you're scarred from Mahomes, and so that's the other side. You don't want to put the ball back in Mahomes, and he's operating from that standpoint. But you know how you can beat him? You flip it, and you get aggressive. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, they just sort of curdled up at the end of that first half, where you're like, okay, we have no business really being in this right now, but we have a chance to steal a touchdown here, right? They have a chance to steal a touchdown. It's third and one, and he runs like this delayed handoff with Mason and runs the field goal unit out. And sure,
14-3.
And sure, that makes it 14-6, right? Okay. If they were getting the ball to start the second half, maybe I'd get it. And then it's technically a one possession game. You know what doesn't make it a one possession game? When you get that touchdown and then you decide to kick the extra point, which you, because of the football gods doing the right thing, you miss badly. Right. And now it's 14-12, and it feels like, oh, the game's over. But then they get another chance and Brock throws that interception and the game is completely gone.
Right. I will never forgive kicking a PAT for it to be 14-13.
I don't understand.
Literally zero justification for it. And people, oh, analytics are so stupid. I'm sorry. Math still has a place in sports. You play to score points. Clearly there's some arithmetic involved. At what juncture is being down one in any way advantageous? What are you going to? It's not Canadian football. There are no rouges. There's no value. Are you going to get a safety to go up by one? What is the value in a sport that is decided by threes and sixes plus ones? What is the possible value of being down 1 point? It's inexplicable. And again, you're right. The football gods doing a service to all of us out there being like, what the fuck are they doing? Because there was no justification to kick it. Therefore, there should have been no justification to make it. And Kyle got exactly what he deserved in that spot. He played to not lose the game. So he lost the game. Right. There are a lot of other things that happened, but that is at the core a big issue in this one. And it's been a big issue for this team for years to come. This is especially the team you can't do it against. You can't do it against Kansas City.
You can't. They are, and it goes back to the Super Bowl decision where Kyle was like, well, if we get the third possession, and Kansas City's like, you're not going to get a third possession.
Right.
And it's like, he hasn't learned that lesson. And again, I've defended Kyle plenty. This was a game where I was like, this is pretty damning. This is somebody who is coming from a place of, let's not make the mistake, versus a team that says, we don't fear God. We don't fear any man.
I am
God. We are going to play to win, and we don't care what happens. And, you know, you get more leeway when you do have the greatest quarterback of all time. But if you're going to pay your quarterback, which you've explicitly stated, you're going to pay Brock Purdy all this money,
no doubt.
You better trust him. And that trust seems to have been frayed. By the way, there's like a long Shanahan discussion with Brock at his locker today where then all the media appeared and he was like, oh God. Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah. No, Kyle is at Brock's locker after the game and he's got his leg up on the seating area of Brock's locker and is just kind of running through a million things. And Brock is just kind of nodding, giving a little yes, sir, here and there. I don't know what it was about. I think that if you go into what Brock immediately said at the podium afterwards, you get the sense that he was putting the season on Brock's shoulders in some sense. And yeah, I don't see an alternative.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of been like that already. And now it definitely is like that because this you're down IU.
Brock was bad. Listen, protection's not great, but like we've expected that.
Bad receivers.
And
doesn't matter.
Like he overthrew Ayuk on that one ball that was open. He took a shot, but like in the past, when he's taken those shots beforehand, he's getting the ball. It's a dot, and he just missed him. He threw that horrible ball that got intercepted to Kittle. I still have to go back and watch on the All-22 what actually happened with the Ronnie Bell thing. Because like, is it Ronnie Bell's fault? Is it
no? Ronnie Bell ran the wrong route. There's no two ways about it. Unless Brock is suddenly incapable of running an offense and doesn't know where people are supposed to be. I'm going to go on just, it's a guess. I'm going to say that Ronnie Bell was supposed to run a corner route and instead sat in the flat.
Right.
He does stuff like that.
But here's the point. We have talked about it plenty and it's the most obvious point in football. It is a quarterback and head coach league.
Yep.
And when you go into this game, fundamentally, it had to be head coach dialing it up, quarterback executing. And executing very well. I said Brock Purdy had to have a great game. This is one of the worst games I've seen from him.
He
had to like not turn the ball over. He turned it over three times. And I know turnovers can be misleading stat.
All three times in Kansas City territory, I believe twice in the end zone.
That's the thing about that Ronnie Bell interception is like you actually have, granted, it's probably a 51 yarder if that's incomplete from Anders Carlson. Who knows? But you could go up in that situation. Instead, Kansas City comes down the field, and because you've missed that extra point, and now you're in this horrible two-possession game thing, it's just all of these things of, I know we've talked about the vibes being off, but like this offense doesn't have an identity. There's some stuff where they're putting two tight ends out there, and they're like, okay, but not sticking to it and not building off of it, and then spreading it wide. And so Kittle's getting the good matchups we're talking about, but it's like nothing is connected to each other. And in all these other years where they've developed on the scheme and built on things, it's like you can't build on something if there's no foundation. And it doesn't feel like they have a foundation of what they're trying to build off. It's like there's some stuff from last year. There's some stuff that's older. That's the classic stuff. But it's not like, all right, we're going to do this, this, and this. Because they don't know what's going to work. And there's like little penalties and there's guys missing blocks. And it's just execution's not quite there. And I think all those guys who miss training camp, it's a huge part of it. And granted, we can't understate the fact that like you have no Juwan Jennings, who's crucial, who is a lot of the times the answer in those hot situations.
Mm-hmm.
No Debo, which as much as we ripped Debo for not separating for man coverage, there's stuff you can do with Debo, you know, to simplify things. And then Ayuk probably tears his ACL. So like, that's a lot to face.
Yeah.
That said, they didn't step up to the challenge even a little bit.
Not even close. And the guy that we talked about all week, Ricky Pearsall, let's be clear about this. If we got to eat any crow on it, let's be clear. He was not good in this game. Now, I think everybody who's listening or watching understands the circumstances at hand, which are this guy got very little training camp because of a prior injury. Then he gets shot. Then he's been out for a month and a half because he got shot. He practiced for a week. Okay. And I think the expectation, Can't say for sure because no one will give us the lowdown on that. The expectation was he was going to get between 10 and 20 snaps. Right. And he was going to get those snaps at Z receiver.
Or in the slot.
Or in the slot for Juwan Jennings. That immediately went away, okay, on multiple levels. Where he was winning in man-to-man early. That's something you were quick to note. You had a good eye on him throughout the game. And he faded. He faded hard. He was getting zero separation. He was also running as an X receiver for most of the game. Because when Debo gets ill, I don't know if Kyle made this adjustment last second or if this was always the plan, but Ayuk moves to flanker. And my thought is that they saw Watson, the outstanding man-to-man corner who goes up against the X receiver,
right,
and says, ooh, that's not great. We'd rather have Debo out there because he's bigger and stronger, and he's not going to separate from anybody, so you might as well have that guy on him. And we'll put Ayuk at flanker where you can get Trent McDuffie, and we can also get a little bit of an open release because of where the flanker typically lines up, which is a little bit of separation from the line of scrimmage. If we keep him tight and in a flank, we have a chance to really get big yardage for Ayuk. And I think that that was the case if you watch early in the game, except for the execution wasn't there. And then you end up in a situation where Ricky Pearsall, who was supposed to play 10, 15, 20 yards, who I don't think knows the offense in full yet because he's missing very clear motion opportunities, as you've noted during the game and stuff. Like, then he looks totally gassed. He wasn't good. He was certainly not a solution to the 49ers problem. I have no problem wearing this. I think you're with me.
Yeah.
Too much, too soon for number 14.
Listen, I've been like pumping up Pearsall as much as anybody because just watching the tape, I know what he's capable of, and he's an extremely talented route runner, an extremely great athlete. But this is a guy who practiced very little, great in OTAs, and got very few practices after that point. He was admitted he was gassed after a Monday practice.
Yeah.
Their plan was probably, like you said, 10, 20 snaps, put him in Juwan Jennings' spot. In the slot where you get really advantageous matchups.
If you go to 11 personnel, about it. Yeah.
Right. I was like, that's a good spot where I think he can try, man. They don't have a lot of tape on him. You get him in that many reps, he's going to stay fresh. But he didn't. And so as I watched the game, I saw him separate on this first, let's say, four or five, and he was like taking the top off and really separating. And then it was like he slowed down and they were locking him up. And listen, I'll own that as much as anyone. Objectively, he was not separating at all. Purdy looked for him a few times. He wasn't there. And it was great coverage. Again, this is a guy who's had no practice going against the best man coverage team in football. I know I said he could help this offense. I'll eat that. But again, he went from going to probably playing in the slot a little bit, maybe some of Z, to going to being your split end top wide receiver where he's getting the toughest matchups, playing 60 snaps. And there's one point in the red zone, I think before the interception that Brock had in the red zone, where he was supposed to motion and didn't. And so it's like he just doesn't have the reps, doesn't have the time. I think the hope is like they can just win the Cowboys game and get some practice in over the bye week and get everyone on the same page. But yeah, no, he was good on the last drive. He was good at the start. In the middle of the game, the meat of the game, he was not separating. And I'll own that because I've been on his side as him beating man coverage as much as anybody. But yeah, first game, tough.
Not just first game tough, first game all the way in, given the circumstances. I think that
it's a lot.
I don't think anyone's going in on Pearsall. We're defending our honor here. That's what's happening here. We hyped up Pearsall, and we're just telling everybody like he was not awesome in this game. We're taking an L. And then we're explaining our side. You can infer whatever you want off of that.
Yep.
Have fun in the comments section. Three catches, 21 yards in this game. George Kittle, of course, man-to-man beater, had a great game.
Real quick, just like Kittle, who was talking about Ayuk, and he got pretty sad. He was like, Ayuk was just starting to figure it out. And it's, week seven? He was like, Ayuk was starting to get it after all of training camp missed. He was like, now he's starting to get it. And Ayuk's been in the league for 4 or 5 years, right?
And I get where that coming from. Not a great look. Also, that's a little bit of Brock too. You could see it you could see them starting to be like, okay, we've had enough reps now on the field, off the field, practice field, that, okay, I'm starting to get that familiarity and that comfort back. And that might have all gone. We'll never know. But as Sean Turner properly brings up in the comments, one of the worst drops I've ever seen.
Brutal.
From a high-level wide receiver. A perfect ball. And one of these, again, just one of these turning points in a game that had about a dozen of them. That was a wild first quarter. That was a wild first half. And the Niners had no business being in the game, and yet there they were, even with their own mistakes and bad decision-making and just all the stupid shit that was happening in that contest.
Yeah.
That Ayuk drop felt like one of the turning points in a game that was dancing around like 1950s.
No question. And by the way, going back to Kittle, another comment he made, because Kittle was pretty honest. He said, someone asked him a question. He said, what did Brock say? Which is interesting. And then he basically was saying, Brock's given us chances to make plays, blah, blah, blah. I haven't talked to Brock, but it seems like maybe he's trying to force something just to give us a little momentum, and you don't need to. When you're playing against a defense, Chiefs are playing at a high level, you don't want to force your hand too much. It's kind of take what they give you and stay on the field as long as possible. And that's literally a quote from Brock, is like, you're supposed to have hot answers and just take what's available. And it did feel like he was pressing. And
yeah,
Kittle, like, I don't think you can really question that he is like a leader on this team, and he calls shit out when he sees it.
Yeah.
He had the great game, like you were starting to point out, that we predicted. Obviously, when you lose all your wide receivers.
Anybody who knows basic football can see that George Kittle's going to have a great game.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. When we broke this game down on Friday, we were, it's pretty obvious what we thought was going to happen. The Chiefs aren't going to deviate from a game plan that won them the Super Bowl. They're going to be a man-to-man team. They're going to press up on you. They're going to be physical on the defensive line because that's how they're built. They're going to shoot the gaps in the run game because that's what they're built to do. And they are gettable in some spots, and they proved gettable in some spots, but their quality will outweigh their susceptibility time and time again because they're so goddamn sound and so damn well coached. And because when push really comes to shove, you can move Chris Jones around and he's going to get a win for you. And because you have great corners behind him, you're in a good position. They never had to move Chris Jones around, never got to push comes to shove time. But I was still yet with everything that I thought would happen, everything that we had studied the entire week, studied the entire offseason, I was still stunned seeing in person for the first time. Well, I didn't even stay around for the Super Bowl. So the first time in a long time, how fucking mean the Chiefs are. These dudes are in your grill and they are strong as shit. It does not translate appropriately on the film. They are up there jamming your shit all the way into the opposite end zone. They played more man and more press than even I expected. And I would have predicted they would play 70% man and press.
Chris Jones was in their locker room like, yeah, we just play man. We're just playing man against him. It's going to work. And they're just giggling because they can. And it's like, you're right. They're just built. We were passing the Chiefs players like in the hallway on the way they're going to the bus. And you're like, these guys are enormous. They're huge.
They're thick boys. It's not even that they're tall or wide. Right. They're all just built like logs. And it's really impressive.
Spags just has them dialed in a way where the most terrifying part is the reality is, like, they said it a few years ago. They didn't, when they won the Super Bowl, and they didn't even know the defense. And now they know the defense. And their defense is dominant and arguably the best in the league, which is a horrifying prospect because Mahomes and the offense are just barely getting through it, making mistakes, and they're 6-0. And they just feel like the Patriots. It feels inevitable. They don't care. They're ruthless. They are super hyper, hyper, hyper aggressive and rightly believe everything's going to work out for them. Like it's a preordained destiny. And if you're the 49ers, you can never, ever, ever rightly believe that you're going to beat this team again. There's no evidence to believe it. No. They are built in a way that is so much more physical, so designed to beat you, where you tried to counter it this offseason, didn't really fully commit. Part of that's all the cap constraints you have with all of your aging roster.
Right.
Some of the picks you missed on, and some of the picks you wasted. And now it's all coming to bear where I think this 49ers team, sure, maybe works out. Maybe they beat the Cowboys. Bye week, you get McCaffrey back, things start clicking. The NFC is weak. Sure. Could they make a run? Absolutely, that's possible.
There's enough talent left. Yeah.
Brutal second half of the season schedule, but there's enough talent. There's theoretically enough coaching and enough talent to get it done and turn it around. You can limp into the playoffs at 10-7. Maybe those NFC North teams take each other out. You get a couple good matchups. You sneak into the Super Bowl. But if it's the Kansas City Chiefs, you're going to lose.
Yes.
That's the reality of what this game told us.
And they know in the back of their heads, too, they can beat 30 of the other 31 teams in the league, but they can't beat these guys. They can't beat them. Everybody, and we won't know what this really means until a couple weeks from now. But make no mistake about it, this game was circled on the calendar the second the schedule came out. Not just by media, not just by fans, by the team. This was a measuring stick of a game. This was going to tell them if they were still at the level, if they were still good enough. And in many ways, the season didn't really start until today because everything felt tiddlywinks until you play the Chiefs again. Okay. And in a couple of weeks, we'll find out because this game was a turning point. We'll find out what it was a turning point towards. Either this is the moment that galvanizes them to actually lock in and be the best version of themselves, whatever that might be. But they start playing good football again. They start playing complimentary football, to steal a term, again, even though I always think complimentary football is so fucking stupid. But like, they sure shit didn't do it today. Yeah. So, or this is the moment where the entire not quite dynasty falls apart. Like, that's what happened today. Because knowing in the back of your head, we can't beat these dudes, and knowing that no one's going to take care of your business for you, no one's going to take out your boogeyman for you. You're the one who has to kill him, and you can't kill him, and you won't get another shot to kill him until a Super Bowl. Going into that game, how can anyone look each other in the eyes and really say, we got him this time, boys?
Yep.
There's no logic.
And here's the reality. You lost your best man beater wide receiver who is just starting to get his rhythm. Sure, he had the terrible drop. That should be heavily criticized. I'm not pulling back on that. But he
had a good game before that.
He can beat man coverage. He's proven that. And now you've got Debo. You've Jennings, who is a hip thing that like Kyle sort of shrugged it off. That's not something to shrug off. He didn't practice this week once. He didn't even go limited.
That's right.
That's a problem. And you've got Ricky Pearsall, who again we're high on, but has not practiced really.
This is his
first game, and now you're basically asking him to be your split end and go beat man coverage every week because teams are going to throw it at you. I mean, maybe the Cowboys don't because they're a mess and they don't know what's going on.
What's San Francisco then?
It's two messes. It's a slop fight, and the 49ers are hoping they can sneak into the bye 4-4.
NBC is going to have to put this game on Bravo. There's so much reality TV drama.
Thank you. I'm on fire. I actually did like that. Nice. But basically, they're trying to build this up like it's 2021 or 2022, right? They're like, all right, yeah, we're behind the eight ball. I don't know why I put a Southern twang on that. We're behind the eight ball.
Hey, y'all.
No one on this team has a Southern accent.
Brock likes to fake it, but he grew up in Arizona.
Right. And so that's what they're building this up as, right? 2021, 2022. We're going to come back.
We're going to get on back. We're going to ride Debo all the way to Super Bowl.
God, that's
I say.
And so that's their pitch, right? It feels like 2020, and it especially feels like 2020 because they got to go on the road. They got brutal schedule, and they're going to have to face the Bills, who killed their 2020 dream. And I just feel like that Bills game is going to do the same thing this season, where they're going to say, all right, we're like, I don't know what week that is.
They might be dead by then.
Say 5-6. And they're like, all right, we get this back to even. We can finish strong. And they're going to turn into like 5-7. That's just what I feel. I feel like this season is headed to a land of nowhere, and you can develop the rookies and there's promise. And we'll get into some of the pros just because there was some positive.
We got months to talk about the rookies and all this stuff. I do think that we need to maintain the fact that the NFC is currently being led by like the Washington Commanders, and not to take anything away from what they've done so far this season. They put a whooping on Carolina today, as one should, but nothing is actually fucked here. If you had realistic expectations for this team, The problem is this team, and in tow everyone around them, rightly.
Right.
Because the Niners said it's Super Bowl or bust. And we are now operating solely on the plane of this team can't win the Super Bowl. So what is it? Is it bust? Or can they recalibrate their expectations to turn this season into something? Because you mentioned 21-22. Well, they didn't go to the Super Bowl those years. But no one thinks that down on it because, hey, they pulled an NFC championship game appearance out of their ass. Well, it's a little bit different when this entire thing has been billed as last dance and, hey, it's now or never. And I don't know, early returns, pretty clear, never. And what happens next? Yeah. We'll get into it. We got nothing but time to get into it. We might be able to get into it during the bye week because it might be done by then.
Yep.
This is clear present danger shit for San Francisco. And it's not as if we'll get them next year with this squad, given the fact that they probably overdid it in trying to keep this team together for this year. They probably should have been pivoting for this year. Last year was the now or never. And this year, we're seeing the ramifications of not pivoting fast enough. Not to go full Ross and Friends.
They paid Christian McCaffrey, and they had no obligation to.
That's right.
They locked him up for it's basically a two plus one deal. Listen, it's not like crazy cap ramifications, but like they didn't have to do that. They locked it in. That's something they chose to do. They had the Trent Williams situation. They paid him. Ayuk, they paid him. They doubled down. All of the signs, we talked about the bad vibes, like so many times. And it was clear there were so many red flags.
Again, sticking around.
This thing is not over, but I think the most concerning thing by far to me is how inept the offense looks and how Brock, it was something where you're like, I can trust that he's seen it. His superpower was that he was processing, that he was going through reads, and he saw it and felt it. And this year, he's scrambling all over the place because he hasn't trusted where Ayuk is going to be. Mm-hmm. Teams are playing more man coverage, and guys are not separating. He is also not trusting that the offensive line is going to block for him, which is probably a correct expectation. And so you get a situation where Brock is
Shout out to the haters. They're right on that one.
He's no longer trusting what he sees. And because of that, your quarterback, who everything is his vision and seeing the field, and he's not trusting that vision, you have a total collapse right now. And some games he looks outstanding, but like if teams are running man and the receivers aren't separating, there's not much he can do. But he's also not seeing it when it's there because he's not expecting anything to get open. He's not expecting to have time to throw it. And so you just have pure panic all the time. And that is no way to live.
It legitimately, all of the characteristics that he displayed in this game and on the whole this season are reminiscent of what would be happening to a rookie quarterback making his first starts in the league. And you go, wow, you know, he's got all this talent, but he just doesn't have a feel right now. The game is fast for him. All of these things that you would just kind of use as gloss over statements to explain away the struggles, the ups and downs of a rookie quarterback, they all apply to Brock Purdy right now, who's in his third goddamn season. And maybe he just didn't have these growing pains. It's like somebody who, you know, arrested development. And so they go through all of their college dalliances when they're, you know, 30 years old or something. Like, I don't know to what you attribute it. Clearly, it's a lot easier to, I don't know if he's a good quarterback or not. I think he's a very good quarterback. Frankly, it's clearly easier to be good at the quarterbacking position when you have a bunch of really good weapons and a really competent offensive line. Like, no shit. He's clearly better than the other quarterbacks who previously showed up in San Francisco, who also had those things. So there is some quality there. If we want to get into coaching and stuff, that is something that, not to steal, you know, a locker room trope, but like we're going to have to really get into the film. It did not strike me as a game in which Kyle's play calling or scheme felt mismatched. I thought he got out schemed because you could see the clear evidence of good play calls from Matt Nagy and Andy Reid. And on the flip side, Steve Spagnuolo is as good as it gets. But I thought Sorensen had his moments in the game, and I thought Kyle had his moments in the game. They just weren't executed very well.
Yeah, I will say that that's one of my pros. I'll go to the positives just because it's a bleak game.
Let's list off a couple.
And the negatives are obvious. Sorensen, a couple really well-timed stunts. One got that stop where Bosa came around, and the next one was Malik Collins. Same thing. Those were really well-timed. I don't think I've seen them run those this season, or at least not effectively. And those look great. Yeah. That was impressive. The defense came up big.
Then they started running on them.
Yeah. Pros, I will say, Mustafa and Brown, you know, they got attacked right off the rip in the second half, but they're starting to figure it out. We talked to both of them. I think them figuring that out a little bit, and I don't know if they're actually going to fully figure it out this season.
Well, that's a game that it's good that they didn't completely shit their pants, because they have like one viable wide receiver. So if you're shitting your pants against these Chiefs, that's a real issue. But like Brown was very good in coverage against Kelsey, and Noah Gray had his early,
but like it's Kelsey.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Like he's a Hall of Fame tight end who still got a little wiggle in him. Like you're going to get got. And I have no problem with him getting blown up after Mahomes has already crossed the goal line. So, it's more social media show. Yeah. Like, and by the way, again, as you noted, like, hey, good on him. Like he's got, you know, he's a very good player because he gets embarrassed on social media and he's like, oh yeah, they got me good. Like he's not insecure to the point where he's got to project out like, y'all don't fucking know. Like that was bullshit.
I swear to you. He like took ownership for getting trucked by Mahomes. And I'm like, okay, this guy's the truth. Yeah. Like this guy is a dude. And I've raved about Malik Mustafa since talking about Wake Forest 5 months ago.
Yeah.
Like
Super Bowl ended. And you're like, have you seen this Malik Mustafa?
I'm like, have you seen this Wake Forest kid?
Wake Forest. He's my second favorite safety.
There's seven snaps of him on all 22. This is all I could get. It's grainy film from the 1940s.
It's a pruder film of Malik Mustafa.
Genuinely. But like you watch that first half and he felt like he was like the only one that cared. He was the only one moving at a speed that no one else was moving at.
He was awesome.
He flies to the ball, and I think he can be a difference maker. You want to hear something wild that I said to you that I didn't really think I would say at any point. I already said this to you. I think they missed Talano Hufanga in this game.
This game. Yeah. Because they could have played him. They could have gone three safeties and actually played him at Sam linebacker.
Correct.
Because Jake, when I tell you that I never want to see Devondre Campbell play football again, it's not hyperbole. It's not shifting of an Overton window. I can't do it anymore. Because Kansas City has anyone, again, with two brain cells to rub together, saw exactly what every other coach has seen and just said, we're doing that. And early, they're like, we're going at 59. And to the point where the 49ers said, you can't go at 59 anymore. We've benched 59. And then they're like, who'd you put out there? And we're like, here's D. Winters, number 53. And they're like, you know what? We'll go at him. And he's like, what if I don't tackle with my arms? And they're like, great. We're just going to bounce off of you again and again and make sure that you never have contain. And by the way, Fred Warner had a terrible football game by Fred Warner standards. It wasn't just Mahomes shimmying him in the open field. He was consistently getting wrecked by second level blocks. He was consistently out of position in run fills. It was a brutal game. The Chiefs did exactly what Kyle Shanahan is supposedly and in the past has been so very good at, which is just wrecking linebackers' lives. And it's easy when it's 59 and 53 for opposite ends of the spectrum reasons, but to do it to Fred Warner is very telling. Then in addition, they're doing duo blocks on the inside and just wiping out Collins, wiping out Elliott, wiping out Givens. What? Anybody you want, they're just getting wiped out on duo blocks, and then they're getting wiped out at the second level. Beyond that, the interior of the Chiefs offensive line had just an absolute masterclass of a performance. I thought the Niners interior of the offensive line did pretty well in this game, all things considered, and they were still clearly second best between the two options.
And I will say, I thought the Niners at points did really well against the run game, but as it wore on, like we talked about, and the Chiefs will wear on you, and this wasn't even them having... They did have a few long drives, actually, but it was just a game where the ball got turned over and, you know, you're sort of being ground into a pulp just on Shanahan and them not really having answers for man, because they're like, all right, well, our personnel doesn't work. So I guess we're screwed. That's just like fundamentally, I'm sorry, if you're an elite football mind, I can't have that as an excuse. If you're Kyle Shanahan, you can't say, well, we just don't have, you know, man beaters. That's a legitimate excuse in running your offense the way you want to run it. But you need to have answers. I wonder if all these years of losing minds where you lose, you know, Clint Kubiak last year.
Yeah.
You lose Mike McDaniel. You lose Bobby Slowick. You lose so much, and they've replaced it really well. But at a certain point, when there are these like key crux moments, there was this shared sort of knowledge where you could go back, and Shanahan would always go, okay, what did we do in this situation, you know, with Washington? Like, let's let's go back to the Texans, you know, back in the mid early aughts with all these teams, and you'd go, oh, this was our answer to this thing, because football is cyclical. And there's always answers to things, and it turns around. And I wonder if, like, there's so much on his plate. He used to have these guys that had that knowledge at the ready. And, like, he doesn't have time to really go through and look back on all that stuff. I wonder if that's had an effect on, you know, on him. And I'm not going to put it all on Kyle on adjusting. There is, like, a personnel issue. But I wonder if losing some of that talent on the coaching staff, where he just doesn't have the same guys you can turn to and say, what's the answer to this? What do we do this? And just have those conversations. I wonder how much that's having an effect.
His staff isn't as good. I mean, it's full stop. His staff isn't as good. And as Jim Harbaugh said recently, I'm like Moses, I'm going to die on my staff and leaning on my staff. Can't even get the fucking quote right. Regardless, you think about that versus what Andy Reid has going on right now. So Andy Reid has the greatest quarterback who ever lived. Okay. And he's got Travis Kelce, who will show up for a couple snaps every game in his late stage Gronk phase. He has the best interior offensive line in football. But what Andy Reid really has is a staff of guys, particularly at the highest level you can be shy of Andy Reid, that he can put his full faith and trust in. He has Matt Nagy, who is an NFL head coach who I believe went to the playoffs with the Chicago Bears. How you get fired after doing that is beyond me, but alas, it's something that happened. People go, oh, Matt Nagy sucked. He sucked. He sucked. He's clearly got something because Andy Reid lets him call a lot of plays. And yeah, he did a really nice job when I saw him calling plays today. They worked a lot. Now, Andy, of course, gets final say, and Andy calls still a lot of the plays. But Matt Nagy's out there, and clearly Mahomes trusts him because he brought him back into the fold. Clearly Andy trusts him, and clearly he's got a little something to him because he's a good head.
He's just their Josh McDaniels.
Totally, totally. He got Peter principled, and guess what? That doesn't matter to the Kansas City Chiefs because they're not making him head coach. And then on the flip side of it, they have inarguably at this juncture, and it's not a recency bias, and it's not because he was nice to us today, but like
he was nice to us.
He was nice. He's the nicest man, which makes it all the weirder that he like chews glass while he's coming up with things to ruin people's lives on the defensive side. He's unbelievably good. Steve Spagnuolo is as good as it gets, right? He is as good as it gets. And if you are Kyle Shanahan, this guy doesn't just have your number. He has your social security number.
He has your eye scan. He has fingerprint and he's under your bed.
He's in your brain. He's sleeping with your wife. It's all of these things. Ownage doesn't even begin to describe it. This is identity theft. He is wrecking this guy. This is Minority Report bullshit. Like he knows what Kyle's going to do beforehand. It was to the point today. There was a play. It was a PI on Kittle. It was not actually PI on Kittle. They just knew the route so well. They knew what play was coming to the point where they jumped it. And because the ball was a little late, it looks like PI. It wasn't actually PI. The defensive player should have been entitled to the space because he got to the spot first. This Andy Reid has an offensive coordinator who is a former head coach who no one will ever hire as a head coach again. He has a defensive coordinator who is as good as it gets at that position, who got an NFL head coaching job as a defensive coordinator and has won Super Bowls as a defensive coordinator well before he got to Kansas City, who no one will ever hire as a head coach again. He has the two of the best coordinators under him, who is still one of the best coaches, if not the best coach of all time, and that conversation is going to get really interesting here in the next couple of years. You have the greatest quarterback of all time, okay? They're inevitable. They're unbelievable. And meanwhile, Kyle is the one who keeps having his guys taken from him underneath, has a roster that is stars and scrubs that was built the wrong way, and has a quarterback who has now, in the two toughest games that they've played this year, the two toughest defenses they played this year, where you know what's coming. These guys aren't hiding it. Brian Flores and Steve Spagnuolo have eaten Brock Purdy's lunch and eaten Kyle Shanahan's lunch this year. Embarrass them. And it really does beg the question, for a team that has fancied itself as a Super Bowl or bust, a team that was unquestionably, and just go to Vegas, the favorites to win the NFC. Shit, they still might be.
How they were favored in this game is beyond me.
I mean, my wife comes in, and after she's like, how was the car accident? She's like, oh, who? Well, no one actually thought the 49ers would win. And I'm like, no, they were favored by a point and a half. And she goes, oh, shit, we should have made some money on that. I'm like, well, ethical reasons and all that, you know, at least right. Our kids would go to college. So the question for the 49ers is, for a team that was Super Bowl or bust, I'm starting to wonder now, a little late to the party, like, how high is the ceiling really on this team? Like, how good could they possibly be given not just everything that's already gone wrong, but given what was the best case scenario ahead of time? I know it's a bit of revisionist thinking. Like, I know it's hindsight being 2020, but like, the Chiefs are playing like crap and 6-0 because they can win situationally. They win on third down. They go ahead and they have this great defense that particularly knows how to fuck up the 49ers. What are the 49ers good at, Jake? Like, legit, what are they good at?
Running the ball. They got it going in the second half. Yeah, they got it going in the second half a little bit, and then they turned the ball over a bunch.
I mean, Jordan Mason averaged 4.1 yards per carry today with a long of 26.
I mean, he got stuffed. He
had two nice drives.
That's what I mean. They started getting going a little bit in the second half. It's like, this team, realistically, they just have to like somehow beat the Cowboys. I say somehow, and like, the Cowboys are terrible, but like, the way this team is playing and without Ayuk, somehow is, I think, an appropriate verb. They're playing really bad football, really disjointed football, identityless football.
Yep.
And just somehow get to the bye and go, everybody start, go big picture, go into a K-hole, go into a tub and close your eyes like you're in a Minority Report, and just visualize like what this offense should be. Everybody take a trip like it's like Blue Mountain State and come back and have a vision for what this team is, because I think they need to go
find whatever. Aaron Rodgers guy, get some ayahuasca, go on a vision quest.
So everybody go into a hut, in a dark hut for 3 days.
Sweat it out.
Lose your mind, sweat it out. When you come out, tell me what you think the offense should be. No bad answers. People start going, okay, that's a bad answer. That's a bad suggestion. Maybe you do get somewhere. I know I'm being sarcastic, but I do think they have to get weird and start saying, okay, what are we? We don't have Ayuk. Let's fundamentally rethink this. Teams are playing man. How can we beat man without man beaters? How can we get weird? What do we have? Do we just scrap our entire offense? And I'm not saying it's necessarily that bleak, but they are not building on concepts. No. They are not dominating teams. They're not closing out games.
No.
And the whole complementary football thing, when one side is working, the other side is as disjointed as you've ever seen it, and they're perpetually holding on by a thread.
A new part of this team finds a way to lose it. Every game, this team, if the offense is playing well, the defense is dog shit. If the defense is playing well, the offense is dog shit. And if both of them look like they got something going on, guess what special teams is? And I don't have faith that it will just all click together. As a thought exercise, going back to the Kyle thing, and I want to get through a bunch of questions here before we head out, but Kyle is an ideologue, right? Kyle wants to run his offense his way, and he wants to do certain things as he thought them up all week. He wants his little tricks to work. He is not a pragmatist.
And when he explains things, they always make sense. You're like, oh, okay, well.
And you know what? Frankly, a lot of the times, the stuff that he says, as outlandish as it sometimes sounds, work. It's right. To the point, you know, where, you know, the famous video of him on the sidelines, like, they're going to hold 85 on this play. How many players have told us over the years, like, Kyle will say this is exactly what's going to happen, and it's exactly how it happens. Well, this year, because other teams are just selling out and playing man-to-man, like Arizona, great example, they're not built to play man-to-man at all. But Jonathan Gannon's looking at it and going, well, we have one path to win this game, and right. It's to copy Kansas City's. And we might lose by 40, or we can win by 2. And, hey, that's how we're going to play it. And guess what? They won. And a million things had to happen for that to be the case, but they won. Kyle's not an adjuster. Kyle's a front runner. And you can put as much pejorative sauce on that as you want, but the fact of the matter is that the dude's a front runner. If they get ahead, he can't adjust. He can't go off the script. He's got these ideas in his head, and he does not like to change for anybody, much less for an opposite defensive coordinator. Meanwhile, you look at the other team today, and their history as champions, as someone who's gone to the Super Bowl 4 out of the last 5 years, is that they do a great job in adjusting in-game. No one adjusts better in-game.
Anybody. It doesn't matter who it is. They find, right. What's your little skill set? You can't catch a pass? Okay, we're going to run it with you,
right.
Mecole Hardman. You're not actually a wide receiver. We're just going to hand it off and have you go full speed because this defense isn't ready for it. Just use guys in the little ways they have.
And take it one step further. Again, nothing that the 49ers or the Chiefs presented today was any different than the last couple times they've met.
Correct.
Okay, so you think about the blowout loss they had at Levi's Stadium week 7. What was it? I don't know, 20 something, year or two ago. And then obviously the Super Bowl. The Chiefs played a bunch of man-to-man on defense, and they ran that goddamn Mecole Hardman end around again and again. I think he scored 3 touchdowns on it the last time they played in the regular season. Like, how do you not know what's coming? How are you not prepared to stop what is obviously coming? I get that it's easier said than done. I understand there's complexities to this. I'm not pretending any of this is simple or easy to execute. I'm not in any way implying that we could do better. What I am saying is you are getting beaten by the same shit again and again. And at some point that's on coaching, not on players and execution, because you need to either have different players who can do it or change up the game plan to at least counter it, make the other team think about not doing the thing that keeps beating you. And that is just not the case. As much as I would like to give Sorensen some credit here, his defense is soft. We said it before the game, they wore down and they had the final
but
drive.
How much of that is actually on coaching and like defensively, and how much is just personnel?
Fair enough. I don't know what it is. But I do know that he gets the credit and the blame. And this defense is soft. Soft like baby poo. Shout out Kevin Garnett. Charmin soft. And that final touchdown drive for the Chiefs is something that I will think back to one way or another here over the next couple of weeks, because there was a whole lot of quit on that drive. And can you blame them? Probably not. Kansas City had the ball for 10 more minutes in that game. But man, if this team doesn't beat the Cowboys and then they come back out on this hellacious second half schedule and it just keeps going, I'm looking at that drive and saying, oh, I found exactly when this team quit. Because defense will always tell you, because defense is a whatever number, it's a lot effort and a little bit scheme.
What do you realistically think this team is going to do? Because I was just trying to think, this schedule's brutal. I'm going to say they beat the Cowboys and they go into this bye 4-4. I'm going to say that happens, because I maintain that they're going to beat the Cowboys since this season kicked off.
Yeah,
I'll not change that wavering opinion.
You're shaking.
I've never changed that opinion. I still think that's true. I still think they own the Cowboys and that the Cowboys are a mess of an organization. I mean, they're going to be playing for their lives a little bit.
Yep.
But
coming off a bye week.
Coming off it, you got on the road Buccaneers, home, Seahawks, basically playing for your life. You're playing for your life every week at this point, is what it's setting up for.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. And I think they acknowledge that post game where they're like, guess what? We get to live week to week now. Yay.
And then
how many times did we say in September? Well, not you, because you decided to go to Japan, but how many times did we talk about when we were looking at the schedule? As I look over to my beautiful whiteboard here, shout out John Gruden and his illegible grease board. How many times we say you need to make your hay early because it's going to be 100% difficult late. And they went into this game 3-3 and we looked at it like, hey, not too bad given the circumstances.
You had to be 5-3. You had to be maybe 6-2. And instead you're hoping for 4-4, looking down the barrel of away Buccaneers, home Seahawks, away Packers, away Bills, home Bears, home Rams, away Dolphins.
Short who don't week seem Rams.
To care. You know, I guess
Dolphins
just
will have Tua
play.
Back by then. Yeah.
He's just going to play home Lions, who will be playing for something, and Monday then away football. Cardinals. Not a single one of those is like, oh, easy. Unless the Dolphins are just fundamentally cooked and they're not playing Tua.
Yeah.
Even then, I don't know, man.
At Miami. Yeah. I mean, they're in trouble. They're in real trouble. And I'm not at all confident that the leadership on this team, which is going to be called into action in a way that they haven't yet been, has the ability to pull this squad together, because they've been apart since July. At no point has this team felt cohesive or unified, or like it's really had an identity outside of, hey, Fred Warner's on offense and Brock Purdy's, or Fred Warner's on defense and Brock Purdy's on offense. So this could be it. This could be the turning point. This could be the put up or shut up. Sometimes you got to look at death to understand threats that are present. But it really does. I keep thinking back to last year in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where the 49ers went in and just delivered a knockout blow to an Eagles sort of coulda woulda run. And they have still not recovered.
No.
I know they had a nice win today, but like, no one knows what Nick Sirianni does.
Nothing against the Giants or Jets counts.
They're on their third coordinators. Win. I mean, it's just a hot, hot mess. So that's what it feels like the Niners are at. It's stars and scrubs. The stars aren't performing. The scrubs aren't performing. There's this weird middle band of young players who are good that you want to see more of. But like, is that where we're at after?
Yeah.
Seven weeks, come on.
I'll ask you this, because it feels like you could make a prediction after the Cowboys game. You could make a prediction after the Bucket. Every game, it's going to be like, what is this team now?
Right.
Do you think they crack 500?
On the season?
You think they've? Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt to 9 wins.
I think that's fair.
I have a very difficult time. Very difficult time imagining them having double digit wins at the end of the season.
I think
they've looked 9-8 to me since July.
You've maintained it. I was 10-7, and
which very well could happen. By the way, if it's 10-7, they're going into the playoffs feeling really good, because they're doing what, 10-7, that's 6-3 down the stretch against 1, 2, 3. I mean, all but 2 playoff teams. Like that's impressive. 3. That's impressive. But I'll tell you this right now, Jake. This is going to be fucking really enjoy your bye week, because all signs point to this team being fucking exhausting for the rest of the campaign.
And they're going to have to ask so much of Kittle, who's just like already having to do so much and gets hit so hard every game.
There was a point in the third quarter where Kittle's running off the field, and I turned to Nick Wagner of ESPN and I go, oh man, now Kittle's limping, get in line. And Wagner just goes, I think that's just how he runs.
That is actually how he runs.
And he's not wrong, but that's the guy. That's the horse. You're putting it on a donkey who's got a limp. And God bless him. He's a hell of a mule. Debo.
I guess Debo again, and Jennings, who's got a hip, and Pearsall, who hasn't played and doesn't fully know the offense. And I guess Jacob Cowan, you got to move him in there because he had a nice. It's hard to look at this team the way it's constructed now, losing Ayuk.
Yeah.
And feel confident about anything.
Right.
They are in this land of maybes. Maybe they could be good. Maybe they'll collapse. Maybe they'll make a run. I don't know.
I want to get to some questions here. We're just going to run through a bunch of them, but I do want to throw one thing your way, the hour mark here. I have, I've been very lucky to cover the greatest basketball dynasty of the 21st century. They are clearly no longer that, but Moses Moody got paid, so I feel pretty good about it. Good for him. I thought they were going to
D'Anthony Melton guy, Dieter.
He's good. They're going to be a nine seed.
Might be more interesting than they've been in years.
Well, we'll find out. You want to talk about a team that's going to be exhausting. What I saw today felt very reminiscent, emotionally, spiritually, even tactically in a way, to what I would see in the Western Conference playoffs year after year. And it's that the Chiefs are the Warriors and the 49ers are the Rockets. And any other team in football, legitimately, any other team in football, and I think maybe even including the Rams, maybe including probably not the Buccaneers, but maybe the teams that have won Super Bowls recently. I think any other team in football besides Kansas City would trade places with the San Francisco 49ers going into this season. And the same thing would have 100% been true for the Houston Rockets during the Harden, Westbrook, Paul era, whichever one you want. And that thing fell apart. The Warriors, in a weird way, certainly not direct because Durant leaves and then you get all this stuff. They won another title. They aged gracefully in a very circuitous way. And the Rockets exploded. Sorry for the pun, but it just went.
Wait. Dieter, the fact that you're making this and the 49ers have two aerospace engineers in Matthew Wright and Josh Dobbs is unbelievable.
They also have their very own James Harden in Debo Samuel, who I'm sure that meme is making the rounds today. Should we do some questions?
Let's take some questions and get out of here.
I'm going to scroll all the way to the top. Shout out to the sickos for getting in.
Appreciate you, folks.
Jesus M or Jesus M. He could just be Jesus. That's cool. Doesn't bother me one way or another. Niners defense not Super Bowl worthy. Jake?
No.
You don't think
they're Super Bowl worthy? Here's the thing. We talked about it like, I think it was maybe last week. Like, it could develop into a really good defense. But as it stands right now, I have no confidence that the interior of that defensive line is going to hold up or develop. Khalil Davis with a sick pick, by the way. That was pretty dope. You're going to have to hold up there. You're asking so much of Malik Collins. The safeties are looking better, so that's like promising.
That's a
but
win.
Like, you don't have linebacker figured out. Dre Greenlaw, I know people are like, when he comes back, he had an Achilles injury. It just, the way that works is like, guys are usually never the same, and especially not right away. It really takes time, and he's a guy that's about flying off the ball. Your hope is that like D Winters can figure it out and work on form, but I don't see a Super Bowl. Like, when I look at the 49ers defense and I look at where the Chiefs are, you've got a team that is in full comprehension of a scheme. Every single player is in understanding of where they're supposed to be, is in understanding of how offenses are attacking them, and they have answers for it. With the 49ers, it feels like it's like Bosa, go get him, and Fred, try and coordinate everything behind you. And sometimes the coverage looks really good. I will say the coverage is, it's against the Chiefs, who have terrible wide receivers. So I can't you know, say too much about it. It's not bad, but it's like there's full comprehension and there's this full glue, and maybe they can improve in that regard and get there. I don't really see it.
I don't see it on the interior. I don't see it at linebacker, and I have serious questions with safety. I think that this game probably flattered the safeties more than
that's fair
than deserved. Because clearly they're not destiny, because the safeties played well and the Niners lost. So what the fuck do I know? This is a rectum terror.
It's good.
What did the Niners do about Ayuk's contract? They pay it and smile.
Yeah, that's nothing you can do about it.
Nothing you can do about it now. Sorry, trying to get through here a little bit more. A lot of comments about the Ronnie Bell situation, which, listen, I think that Kyle and Purdy are covering for him. It doesn't really matter because it's on Brock one way or another. He made the throw. I've never seen Brock overthrow someone by 10 fucking yards. So I'm not likely to believe that it was Ooh. Brock's bad throw. Alex Simon, All right. Our great friend Alex Simon, shout out to the ultimate sicko, Alex Simon. If the Cowboys game is an L, do you have to consider being sellers? They won't, but they should.
They don't have a lot of options, but like Mooney Ward, if he has like a really great game against Dallas, that's intriguing. Just yes. Because, listen, Yadam hasn't been great, but like,
you get something for a guy that you're definitely losing.
Right. I think that's where you'd go with it. I'm trying to think if anyone else even makes sense. I don't think they have a lot of great trade candidates. I mean, Debo's so much dead money. And if you trade Debo at this point with Ayuk gone, your offense is just gone. And I don't see any way they would do that. There's just not a lot of great options. Ward is the first one that comes to mind and sort of makes sense to me.
There's a couple of options.
Floyd,
maybe. Probably not a position you want to be selling at. Ward makes the most sense. He really does. And this is the issue with stars and scrubs, right? You've got a lot of dudes that no one else is going to want. You can't trade Devondre Campbell anywhere. No one's going to pick him up. No one's going to give you anything for him. You can't trade a Jordan Mason. You can't trade Christian McCaffrey. You can't trade Debo Samuel. You can't trade Brandon Ayuk because now he's injured. You're not trading Juwan Jennings because he's more valuable to you than he is to anybody else. You're not trading George Kittle because if George Kittle goes, what the fuck do you have left? He's irreplaceable for this team. You can't trade any of your offensive linemen because Trent Williams is the same thing as George Kittle and everyone else isn't good enough to trade. Now, I will say maybe you can trade Banks, who had an up and down game, which is being nice. It was an up and down game. Maybe you can get off Banks, who's someone they're definitely losing.
And then you put Burford there.
Put me there. Doesn't matter at this point. If they lose against Dallas, given Dallas's lead into the game, there is zero reason to give them any benefit of the doubt. There's zero reason to believe that anything's getting better. It doesn't matter what happens in Tampa. It doesn't matter what happens in Seattle. You can win both of those games. You can be, what would that be, 6-5 on the season, and you'd still be looking at this saying, nah, man, fuck off.
By the way, Dieter, you just volunteered. Would you like to tell the people what happened? You faced Alden Smith one time? No.
Well,
save that for another time.
Let's put it that he won. He's really good. He's really, really fucking good. Here we go. Tony Wilson from Australia. Shout out Australia. Sickos there love me. I'm still in the doghouse over Jared Hayne from back in the day. Shout out Jared Hayne. He's rotting in prison. That's cool. Is Kyle Shanahan's ability to game plan the Niners' best feature while Kyle's inability to adjust the Niners' biggest problem? So is Kyle's strength, does it go hand in hand with his weakness?
I think this is like the fundamental
great question. I wish I had a column this thoughtful and interesting.
I think it's the fundamental question and problem with Kyle is, like you're talking about, he's an ideologue. He believes in what he's seen on tape and how to exploit it. And if it doesn't match up, or if, you know, we've got this thing to set up this thing, but often you've got players who make mistakes. And so that thing doesn't work. And then next drive, you try and run it and the defense is adjusted and you're not adjusting because you went in based on what you saw on film. And you're sticking to this idea of what the plan was versus what the defense is showing, like in the Super Bowl, and you just keep feeding a guy who's not separating.
Right.
I think that is a fundamental problem, and I think that gets to the core of why people have been frustrated with Kyle for a long time, despite him having great results, is because you feel like there is another level to get to, and there's a stubbornness and an unwillingness to say, oh, this isn't quite working. And there's, and some of his best games are when, actually his best games are when at halftime they go, oh, we saw this thing wasn't working. We adjusted. Adjustments are what make great coaches.
Correct.
And it feels like, I don't know if he's gotten more stubborn or there's a lot of things going wrong.
Well, right? It's a question of trust, right?
Correct.
Does he trust his players to execute what he gives them? Is he paring down what he does? I don't know. And frankly, I would love to know. We will not know, right? We are not good enough journalists to find out to any degree of comfortability what's going on with Kyle Shanahan's offense and where the fault lies. We can only look to what's put on the field and to what we hear secondhand, I guess in some cases third hand, regarding the conversations about that. But we're not in the meetings. We're not in the locker room, and those guys don't give that shit away for free. So I don't know. I'll say this: outside of the scheme, I'll repeat what this is Kyle Shanahan's biggest test as a head coach, because this team is on the brink. They're on the brink. They can pretend like it's just one game. It's not. There is doubt. There is second guessing. There is worry. They are all the way in on this season, and this season's gone like shit. This is, if Kyle can find a way to pull it out of this team, I don't want to hear anything from anyone about him ever again. He might never win a Super Bowl, but God damn it, you can never give up someone with a floor that's this high. You just can't. Yeah. You can't do it. But this team also has a very real chance. Maybe it's a coin flip. I don't know. Of completely collapsing around itself.
Totally.
And we start getting finger pointing and subtweeting and all of this extra shit. And that kind of stuff brings to an end teams as we know them. They might do it to themselves with their record, but they also
I will say
infight all the way to the end.
The one thing you get out of the season with Ayuk gone, so you get a fundamental question. Is Brock worth paying all that money? The thing you get asked, and that was the thing of like, yes, injuries are a problem. No question. It's hard to adapt when you lose your top three wide receivers and you're facing one of the best man coverage teams in the league. Yeah. That should not be understated. That is a real problem. And you're without McCaffrey. That's a real problem. That's really hard to overcome. That said, they didn't look like they had any interest in overcoming it. And that's why we're being so critical. And there's so many ways they failed. But in this season, you get to maybe ask and answer the question of like, is Brock worth it? Can he do it without his top target? Can they adapt? Is he worth all that money? Or do you say, actually, we're going to tag you and see how that goes.
Do the Niners need to buy Jake? Jacoby Myers has been thrown out. I'm sure a million other names will be thrown out. Do they need to buy?
It depends on the price, but if they're selling Jacoby Myers for, you know, a sixth?
Yeah, I mean, maybe? Sure. Who's not taking that? They are in a position to buy if they want. And the question is how aggressive they want to be. But yeah, I don't think it would be a bad idea. You're already all the way in. I know that might give you the thought of saying, hey, let's hold on to what assets we do have. Let's hold on to our money. Let's not. Yeah. I'm not saying go all the way in.
Yeah, Myers.
But if you can add a player or two on the cheap, I think you got to do it. Who gives a shit about a day? I mean, we care a lot about day three picks. We care about day three picks maybe more than the teams. If you can give up a day three pick and get someone who can help you win a game, a singular game, that's fine. I would want to make something. I don't think we'll get to this for the rest of the week. Okay. Yep. So I just want to talk about this right now, and then we'll let everyone on their merry way. You don't know that Ben Johnson would be a good head coach. You don't know. You have no idea. The fact is, he's not a head coach, and that's interesting. I'll say nothing more than that, but it's interesting that the exceptional offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions, who has made Jared Goff look competent, who also has a great offensive line and great wide receiver,
and wants to be paid a very large sum of money.
No doubt about it. But the fact that he is not an NFL head coach when there were seven, eight opportunities is interesting. Interesting. That's all I'm saying about that. And the idea that he would immediately come in and fix all that ails the San Francisco 49ers feels aggressive to me. He very well could, right? Kyle Shanahan didn't have any experience, as is rightly pointed out in the chat. And he comes in. Every head coach needs his first job. But the idea that Ben Johnson, who can scheme up a play pretty well, would just come in and be the head coach this team needs feels like wish casting and wishful thinking. And in general, just, I need a change because I don't like what's happening right now.
And yeah, you know, who's never going to, you know, who's never going to fire Kyle unless there's like three straight seasons of them being terrible.
Yeah.
Jed York, who's been so, so scarred from the John Harbaugh thing and that valley and that nightmare.
Right.
No one loves that dude more, and no one is more defensive of him. It would take a lot for Kyle to go. I think you'd see Lynch go before Kyle.
Right.
You know, by the way,
as well he should, because if Kyle... I don't think Kyle Shanahan became a shitty coach overnight. I do think the 49ers roster got aggressively worse year over year. And that's not a new take. That's a take that I had in March. And last time I checked, John Lynch has a lot more say over personnel these days than he used to. This is a badly constructed football team. That stems back to trading three first-round picks for Trey Lance. That stems back to a lot of decisions that have been made on day two and day three, of which Kyle has plenty of blame in those circumstances. But this is a bad football team, top to bottom, with really good top-end players, of which half of them are injured, right? So the idea
that... Which is what happens when you go to the Super Bowl, as we discussed, and why totally. We were so down on this team, and when you have guys that don't practice, and so nothing clicks.
They did not have a practice. They've never had a full practice with all their best players. And they have not. They did not practice in earnest.
Seriously. Until
after the 53 cuts.
Folks, like we actually, like, I don't think we made this point clear enough because there's some people that haven't been with us the whole time. We were talking about it in training camp. You had no Ayuk. You had no Trent Williams. You had injuries left and right. You had no McCaffrey. The amount of guys that were hurt and you're having like sort of fake practices in the middle of training camp when you're supposed to be developing this shit. When like last training camp, you had Fred Warner, who was jawing at Brandon Ayuk. Ayuk is like making some of the best catches you've seen. He's dominating. Warner's talking shit. Those two are fighting.
Yeah.
In the middle of training camp, we're talking about Tatum Bethune. Is he your sixth linebacker, which we're going to talk about anyway, because we're not well. But like that's all you could talk about because there was nothing. You had like Elijah Mitchell who just combusted, and like Isaac Arendo who wasn't, like, none of these pieces are out there. So the fact that it looks terrible now could not be surprising. This team did not practice. They were a mess in all of training camp. The vibes were awful. And then they're just like, all right, let's figure it out as the season goes. And they're like, what are we? And they don't know. And they don't have time to figure it out. And in a season where maybe the schedule was flipped, where they get tough games at the start, and then they can work into an easy second half. They don't have that luxury, and now it's a grinder in the second half, and you better figure it out this week and the bye week, or you're cooked. And that's the reality.
I appreciate the severity of the moment.
Hey, I love it.
If you're gonna have to fight for your life, let's get this push or shove moment done as early as possible. Now, I understand that if you succeed in this one, we just repeat it ad nauseum, but at least it puts some stakes, because I'm not going to lie to you, Jake, going in, and I told you this, going into today's game, this was the first game in a couple of weeks, even as the Niners, I mean, Thursday Night Football, interesting enough, don't get me wrong, it felt like that was do or die. It's also, yeah. I'm not there, so didn't feel it the same way. I'm not flying to Seattle. Not flying to Seattle on a fucking Thursday. I had other shit to do. But like New England, Arizona, like I'm going in and I'm going, yes, I'm interested in what happens and I have to watch it go down. But like the interest only comes from the result. And this game, I was hyper excited for it because I was interested in all the nuance that went into the result. The result was neither here nor there. It was all the details on the insane, freaky, like opposite day situation happening with these teams. Now that the Niners are just in any week can be our death, I'm pretty interested week to week again. Hope you're interested too, because heaven knows we're going to have a lot to talk about. Tuesday, Jake, we're doing film breakdown and early Cowboys preview, and then Friday is our crazy mega spectacular breakdown. That's the schedule. I hope I'll see you, and I hope I'll see everybody in the comments section. Except for some of you. You know who you are. Thanks for being sickos. Thanks for hanging out with us. Appreciate Please don't folks. Hit me on 880. And we'll talk on Tuesday.
Thanks, folks.
And now I have to figure out how to end the goddamn stream. There we go.